The little essay went off in March, and I forgot it. Somewhere along the way, I must have gotten a note saying it would be published at the editor's discretion. But if so, it was quickly forgotten in the press of turbulent feelings that accompanied my own internal struggle. Finally, on July 5, 1991, I swallowed hard and quit. 20 days later, the Journal published the piece. A week later, I was studying invitations to speak at the NASA Space Center, the Western White House, the Nashville Center for the Arts, Columbia Graduate Business School, the Colorado Librarians Convention, Apple Computer, and the Financial Control Board of United Technologies Corporation. 9 years later, still enveloped in the orbit of compulsion schooling, I had spoken 750 times in 50 states and 7 foreign countries. I had no agent and never advertised, but a lot of people made an effort to find me. It was as if parents were starving for someone to tell them the truth. My hunch is it wasn't so much what I was saying that kept the lecture round unfolding, but that a teacher was speaking out at all, and the curious fact that I represented nobody except myself. In the great school debate, this is unheard of. Every single voice allowed regular access to the national podium is the mouthpiece of some association, corporation, university, agency, or institutionalized cause. The poles of debate blocked out by these ritualized figurehead voices are extremely narrow. Each has a stake in continuing forced schooling, much as it is. As I traveled, I discovered a universal hunger, often unvoiced, to be free of managed debate, a desire to be given untainted information. Nobody seemed to have maps of where this thing had come from or why it acted as it did, but the ability to smell a rat was alive and well all over America. Exactly what John Dewey heralded at the onset of the 20th century has indeed happened. Our once highly individualized nation has evolved into a centrally managed village, an agora made up of huge special interests which regard individual voices as irrelevant. The masquerade is managed by having collective agencies speak through particular human beings. Dewey said this would mark a great advance in human affairs. But the net effect is to reduce men and women to the status of functions in whatever subsystem they're placed. Public opinion is turned on and off in laboratory fashion. All this in the name of social efficiency, one of the two main goals of forced schooling. Dewey calls this transformation the new individualism. When I stepped into the job of school teacher in 1961, the new individualism was sitting in the driver's seat all over urban America, a far cry from my own school days on the Monongahela, when the Lone Ranger, not Sesame Street, was our nation's teacher, and school things weren't nearly so oppressive. But gradually they became something else in the euphoric times following World War II. Easy money and easy travel provided welcome relief from wartime austerity, the advent of television, the new nonstop theater offered easy laughs, effortless entertainment. Thus preoccupied, Americans failed to notice the deliberate conversion of formal education that was taking place, a transformation that would turn school into an instrument of the Leviathan state. Who made that happen and why is part of the story I have to tell.